We'll do a quick review of our parsha. We're beginning the book of Bamidbar, and in the book of Bamidbar, Nachmanides, the Ramban, writes that most of the mitzvot are mitzvot that focus on that time period, the period of the desert. There are very few mitzvot that are for all of time, meaning most of the mitzvot in Bamidbar are focused on the mitzvot of the desert. We have in Parshat Pinchas all the sacrifices of the Yamim Tovim. You do have certain mitzvot that are for eternity, but the primary focus of the book of Bamidbar is the mitzvot of the desert. With that understanding, we could understand why the book of Vayikra concludes, these are the mitzvot that Moshe taught, because technically, at the end of the book of Vayikra, we finished the mitzvot. There are a few points to add on that we do in Bamidbar, but technically we finished, and then Dvarim is a review. So now we're entering a book that focuses on the mitzvot of the period that we were in the desert, the mitzvot of the Oel Moed, the special mitzvot that revolved around living in the desert and having the godly appearance in the Oel Moed. So that's why the book is called Bamidbar. And we're going to focus on our parsha. According to the Rambam, according to Maimonides, there are no mitzvot in our parsha. Our parsha has no mitzvot that are relevant today. The Halachos Gedolos, Rav Yehudai Gon, who wrote a work called Halachot Gedolot, he was one of the first commentaries on the Shas. He's a very early Gon. Sometimes his words were by mistake interjected into the Gemara. You have places in the Talmud where it's unclear whether it's him talking or the Talmud talking. He was so early that sometimes the printers got confused. They put his words in the Talmud. So Baal Halachot Gedolot, he's of the opinion that the last words in the parsha are a mitzvah. The Torah says, "V'lo yavo lirot kevala et hakodesh," the tribe of Kehaz, they shouldn't come and see when the holy is covered up. So we derive from there that there's a prohibition also to steal any object from the Ohel Moed. So he says that's a mitzvah. That's the biblical prohibition of stealing an item, a vessel that belongs to the temple. It's its own prohibition, and that's derived from there. But going with the Rambam, there are no mitzvot technically in our parsha. Our parsha has no commandments, no positive commandments, no prohibitions.
So you're trying to say that aside from the regular prohibition against thievery, there's a specific one that would apply just to temple?
Correct. Correct.
But another disagree.
Well, right. We say there's a prohibition of Me'ilah, but not this prohibition, right. Okay, so our book begins. Hashem tells Moshe, and the Torah identifies what time, what place, exactly at what date. And the Medrash says, mashal, an allegory, what's this similar to? It's similar to a king that marries a first wife, and he doesn't write her a marriage contract. He doesn't write her a ksuba. And then he gets tired of her, he divorces her, and he doesn't write her a divorce contract. He doesn't write her a get. He marries a second wife, he doesn't write her a ksuba, and then he divorces her and he doesn't write her a get. He marries a third wife, again, he doesn't write her any marriage contract, and when it's over, no get. Time passes, and he sees a poor young girl. She comes from a good family, but she's an orphan now. There's no one there really to take care of her. He calls his friends and he says, I want to marry her. And this time, I'm not treating her like I treated the other ones. For her, she comes from a good family. She's modest. She's going to be modest and faithful. I could trust her that the marriage will last. So, write down, we're going to get married, what day it is, what year it is, what year in the cycle it is, what month it is, how many days into the month it is, what city we're getting married. Write down all the details. I want testimony to this day that I am marrying her, because this is going to last. So too says the Medrash, Hashem created the world, and he had the generation of the flood. He said, no good, wiped out the world, starting from scratch from Noah. God saw the people evolve again to the Dor HaPalaga, they unite in rebellion against heaven, and God says, no good, scatter them across the earth. God has another group of people, which God gives them an area on the land of Israel, which is so lush that they don't have to water it, area has all the fruits you could dream of. It's like walking in the Garden of Eden, and these people become the most cruel people on planet Earth. These people are the Sodomites. They say, no one can come to our territory. Leave us alone. No one can enter. We want to keep all the good to ourselves. So God has to overturn them.
Well, didn't they let Lot in because he was wealthy, and they just because they were so greedy, they would let wealthy people in?
Okay. Okay. That's an interesting understanding.
Was he his whole life? Or did they allow David?
So the verse says, "Vayehal adsdom," that Lot set up his tents. He had so much wealth that it extended from basically, what does it say? From where? I don't remember. His tents extended a great distance, all his wealth, all the way till it reached Sdom. And then he lived like next door to them. They saw his wealth, and slowly he became a citizen. Till ultimately he became a judge there. So the Sodomites, they got all the blessing from God. They used it to become a cruel people. Then God had another people who were given a lot of blessing. They were given territory that's like the Garden of Eden, it's described. Kigan Hashem Keretz Mitzrayim. The land of Egypt is described like the Garden of Eden. It was so lush. And what did they do with it? They became a world empire, a cruel world empire. God says, begun with them. So finally, God says, but now, this is different. All the other ones, the generation of the flood, the generation of the Palagah, the Sodomites, the Mitzrim, doesn't say when God created them, it doesn't say an exact date when they were destroyed, but all it says is on this day, the floods came flooding down. Am Yisrael, Hashem says to Moshe, they're not like their predecessors. They come from Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. I want you to write down what day, what month, what year in the cycle, what location, where did I uplift them? That's our parasha. Hashem tells Moshe, "B'midbar Sinai, be'echad lachodesh hashini, b'shana hashinit, se'u et rosh kol adat bnei Yisrael." I want you to uplift all of the Jewish people. When God is counting the Jewish people, He's uplifting them. Imagine, let's take a simple example. We live in the state of Israel. How many of you ever met the Prime Minister? Never. Oh. Once you met Shamir, but all of us, we've never met him. He doesn't, oh, you met him, okay. He doesn't take the time to come and shake our hands. Moshe Rabbeinu's counting the Jewish people, he's going to meet every individual. Could you imagine what that means? And he's so much bigger than the Prime Minister. I shouldn't even compare. And yet Moshe meets each one. We're uplifting. Every individual is important. No, approximately all 2 million people. Yeah, it took a lot of time.
Even little kids and stuff, like
he counted. Okay, so you say from 20 and up. So you're right, 600,000. So he's counting, and this is an uplifting of the Jewish people. The nations, they were wondering why are they different than us. So we say, Havu Lashem Mishpechot Amim. When the nations were jealous and they said, why do you take them over us? Why do you choose them? So Hashem tells them, show me your genealogy. How many of you were faithful to your wives and how many of you were faithful to your husbands? Tell me that your kids are really your kids. Tell me that you know you haven't been doing improper things. And the nations have nothing to answer. So God says, but the Jewish people were. And that's what our parsha says. Hashem says, I will count them, and that counting is important. I've chosen the Jewish people because they're faithful. The wives are faithful, the husbands are faithful. And that's what the pasuk in Tehillim says, Havu Lashem Mishpechot Amim. God says, nations of the world, families, you show me what kind of families you build. Show me what kind of genealogy you have. In our parasha it says, Vayityaldu an Mishpechotam. They're able to trace their genealogy, and God attests to the fact that they were faithful to their wives. That's also the juxtaposition that in the end of last week's parasha, in the end of the book of Vayikra, it says, these are the mitzvahs that God commanded the Jewish people at Sinai. And we begin with the counting. Now let's enumerate the families. What's the connection between the mitzvahs and the families? The connection is everything. God says that's why they're chosen. At the end of our 40 years in the desert, we had a few thousand men that went off with Midianite girls. The nation started saying, God, now why do you choose them? They've also done improper things. So God sent a plague and killed everyone that went with the Midianite women. Everyone died. And then God said, it's an excellent question. Wait till Parshas Pinchas. It's a good question. We'll get there. So Hashem said, I want to reinstate the purity of the Jewish people. In our parsha, the Torah tells us it was the beginning of the second month of the second year. In the next week's parsha, the Torah is going to reverse chronologically. The Torah is going to talk to us a month earlier. And from here we derive the concept in Mukdam Muchav Torah, that the Torah is not written in exact chronological order. Sometimes things are written out of chronological order for the sake of a different order. God had a reason why he wanted it in that order. The godly plan was that we enter the land of Israel now. Meaning we've received the Torah, what's the next step? Enter the land of Israel. We're going to mess it up. We're going to send the spies. We're going to say we don't want to go. We will mess it up. But as far as the godly plan is concerned, the book of Bamidbar begins with the plan to go into the land of Israel. So God says, you're going to go into the land of Israel, you're going to have to fight wars. Well, you have to know how to mobilize the army. So take a count, see how many people are fit to go into the army, and then you can go and fight the wars. We have a rule in this world that whenever a person takes a few steps towards God, God takes many steps towards him. We just got to start the process. Ani le dodi, when I come towards my beloved, dodi li, he's coming towards me. God says, "Pitchuli petach ke petach shel machat." You open the opening like the eye of a needle. You just start the process, and I'll open it like the greatest opening in the temple, the Petach Haolam. But we got to take the steps forward. The tribe of Levi, when Moshe came down off the mountaintop, and the Jews were wondering, should we go with the Egel? Should we not go with the Egel? Moshe declares, "Min Hashem Elai." Who wants to be for God? Come to me. The tribe of Levi steps forward. They step forward. So now in our parsha, Hashem says, you count them separate. They're my chosen ones. They're my Levim. They're going to have a special role. They step forward, so God brings them forward even more. We have the counting. You guys can go over the parsha, see the numbers of each tribe. The heavenly chariots, God is described as having heavenly chariots. And those chariots have different angels on the bottom and different wheels that can spin in all directions, in all four directions. And the angels are described as being like wheels, or fanim, and they also have faces on each side. And then the prophet in Ezekiel describes their faces. When the Jews saw that on all four sides of God there are battalions of angels, and they're set up corresponding to planet Earth, corresponding to the ways of serving God, the nation said, we wish we had that we were set up like the angels. And so God gave them that wish, and that's what the verse says, set up the Jewish people according to their flags, be'otot, with signs. What are with signs? Just like the signs of the heaven. They saw the signs of the heaven, that's how they were set up. So we have a tradition how their flags were set up. Reuven's flag was red, and it had the Dudaim on it. Yehuda had a lion on it. Yosef had an ox on it. Dan had an eagle on it. Those are the four sides, and those are the four shapes that correspond to the Kruvim that Yechezkel saw. Okay, I don't think we should go into the flags. You guys could look at any art scroll Chumash. You'll see the setup of the camp. Every year I try to spend a few minutes explaining it, and every year everyone falls asleep. So this year I'm leaving it as homework. We get smarter as time goes on. Open up Narat Shul Chomish, or the Living Torah, and you'll see the map. You'll see exactly how it was set up. Yeah?
Well, you just reminded me of a question that I don't know if it's relevant to what we've been taught. Does the Torah, Judaism and the Torah and the concept of Judaism agree that there can be extraterrestrial life?
It's a good question.
Like
we could discuss it Thursday night.
Thursday night.
Okay. This week Thursday night is Yom Yerushalayim. Next week is Bezrat Hashem.
It would have been on the fifth day, right?
The Torah, when it tells us of Aaron's children, it describes them as the children of Moshe and Aaron. So we know we have a mitzvah. The first mitzvah that the Torah says is Pru Urvu. The mitzvah of Pru Urvu is a two-step process. One, bring children to the world, procreate. to educate them with a Torah lifestyle. If a person brings a child to the world and that child, God forbid, is a bandit, is not living a Torah lifestyle, so then he hasn't fulfilled the mitzvah of Pru Urvu. Pru Urvu is two steps. So we say that a person who teaches someone Torah, it's as though he bore that person. It's as though he gave birth to that person. Why? Because he's fulfilling that half of Pru Urvu. Ben Azai had many students. He never got married. He gave a lecture and he said, whoever doesn't get married, he's destroying the world. He's a horrible person. And his student said, what a lecture. Rabbi, what about you? So he said, what can I do? I love Torah. What kind of answer is that? He said, other people can keep the world going. What kind of answer is that? The answer is, he said, I'm focusing my life on the second half of Pru Urvu. I'm educating the generation. That's my strength. I don't have the strength. We have in the Talmud, it says he tried marrying, I think it was Rabbi Kiva's daughter, and it didn't work. His mind, he just couldn't put his mind to it. Okay, say that. That's there are exceptions in the world. One in a million, or one in 10 million. Yeah?
If the mitzvah entails teaching the child Torah, how could it have been given to Adam who lived before the giving of Torah?
It's an excellent question. Every mitzvah that was given to Adam was repeated to the Jewish people. If it was only given to Adam, it was given to Adam on Adam's level. We were given it again. And when we were given it again, that's the way we were given it. You could also say Adam was given it with the obligation to teach them to be moral, to keep the seven.
A more detailed version of the mitzvah, with like the extra things that God?
That's a good question. That's discussed. How exactly, when it was repeated to us, on what level was it repeated? Avraham Avinu was commanded to do circumcision. Are we doing circumcisions based on his commandment? No. We have our own commandment to do circumcision. All the mitzvahs had to be repeated for the Jewish people. The Talmud discusses why. But that's...
But is not an oracle, right?
That's true. That's true, but nonetheless, we say every mitzvah had to be repeated. Meaning we were in a different realm after
why
the Gemilta.
Well, why didn't God give it to Noah? Why don't we just... I mean, I don't want to, like...
Right, so we got to leave that for Thursday night. Moshe is told, you go count the Jewish people based on God's say-so. So Moshe goes to the tent, and God tells him how many people are inside the tent, because he's supposed to count them from 30 days and up. He says, I mean, 30 days and up, the kid's still nursing. I'm going to go into the tent and count the babies. Only the mother's home. That's not nice. That's not modest. God tells him, you go, I'll take care of it. Moshe goes to the tent, and God tells him how many people are in the tent. So why do you have to go to each tent? Because that's the rule in life. God says, you do yours, I'll do mine. But first you do yours. Yosef, it says by Yosef, V'chol asher hu oseh, Hashem atzlech biyado. Whatever he does, God makes successful. So if God wanted him to be such a success, why did he have to do anything? Because that's the rule in life. V'chol asher hu oseh, whatever he does, God makes successful. But God insists that we take the first step. It's the same thing with Parnassah, everything in life. We daven that Hashem should make it succeed. We recognize that Hashem is the one making it succeed when it does. But we also have to take the steps. We have to do our best. So we have the counting of Levi. They have their own count because they're exceptional. We have the exchange of the firstborn Jews for the Levim. And then we have the redemption of the over. There were a few that were over, so they were redeemed. And the Torah enumerates what's the work of different Levim. And a Levi is not allowed to do different work, meaning a Levi who's responsible in the time of the temple, for example, he's responsible for the gates. If another Levi who sings wants to help him out, he's not allowed to. It's a biblical prohibition. He could get the death penalty for that. The Talmud records that once Rabbi Yoshua was a Levi, was there, and I think he was the one who wanted to help an older Levi close the doors. There was an older Levi who was responsible for closing the doors. He wanted to help him out, and he said, don't touch. It's a biblical prohibition for you to help me. You're a singer, and I'm a doorsman, and the singer's not allowed to do the doorman's work. Doorman's not allowed to do the singer's work. Well, I shouldn't say that. In the desert, they each had different responsibilities as far as the different utensils, who took what. The general rule, when they took the utensils en route, they'd wrap them up. So the table was wrapped, the shulchan was wrapped first with blue, a garment of blue, and then on top of that, red, and on top of that, hide, which makes sense that the top layer should be hide, because hide could withstand water and dust and everything, right? when they took the menorah, so the menorah was covered with blue wool, and on top of that hide. The Mizbeach Hazav also, blue wool, then hide.
What kind of hide?
Hide of tachash. The tachash animal, which is a unique animal. We don't have it anymore.
Was that the one horn deal?
Could be, yeah. Horns. Something like that, yeah. The Mizbeach Nechoshes had dark red, and then on top of that, tachash. Everything had an upper layer of tachash, except for the aron. The aron, that Hashem says, that should be covered first with the kapores, then the tachash, and on top, blue wool. Because the aron represents purity, so on top, what you always saw was the blue, which corresponded to the blue of the sky. Aaron, Elazar, the son of Aaron, is responsible for the oil and the ktores and the mincha and the shemen amishcha. So the simple understanding is he didn't carry all of that. He couldn't have carried that much weight, but he was responsible to ensure that all of that was taken each time they traveled. The Yerushalmi says there was a nes. He'd carry 183 log of oil. Figure that's like carrying maybe 70 Coke bottles or 100 Coke bottles. The log is a... No, much more than that. And 365 money is 100 gold coins, 100 silver coins of ktores, because a money for each day. So you had tremendous weight. You're talking about maybe a ton or two. I never sat down and figured it out, but you're talking about a lot of weight. So the Yerushalmi says, yeah, it was a miracle that he carried that weight. Okay. The Torah says, be careful. Al tachritu, don't destroy the family of Kehas. They're the Levim that are responsible for the Holy of Holies. Make sure that when they come in, they don't see something that they're forbidden from seeing. Keep it all covered, so that when they come, it's all prepared. So the simple understanding is, they shouldn't see anything that's improper. Take care of them, because if they do, they could drop dead. They're not allowed to see the Holy of Holies. Make sure it's all taken care of before they show up to carry it. They carried the Holy of Holies, but when they came, it had to be all wrapped up. The Medrash says that if they did transgress, make sure to give them lashes to absolve them from death. Why do we give 40 lashes? Because it takes 40 days for the fetus to start taking form, to go from just being liquid to start taking form. And corresponding to those 40 days, God says a person gets 40 lashes, which also corresponds to the Torah that was given in 40 days that Moshe was up in heavens. Makos. And that can absolve a person for transgressing the Torah that was given in 40 days and save his life that was also created in 40 days. With that, we're basically brought to the conclusion of the parsha. Hashem says, don't let the family of Kehas come see the Kodesh HaKodashim being folded up. Make sure it's all covered up. Why? Because I am there. And the simple understanding is that all year long, Hashem is there in the Holy of Holies, between the Kruvim, and that's why the Kohen Gadol can't enter there. Even when he enters, there's smoke there. He doesn't stand there and look, oh, what beautiful Kruvim, and God appears to the Jewish people. No, God is there on behalf of his people, and therefore we take care to be modest and not to look. And that's a quick overview of our Parshas Bamidbar. Now we'll go over to Megillat Rut.